Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we're talking about Trump, the government shutdown, the war between US and Mexico, the crisis, and Trump's speech. And then there's the mess of Brexit, and the mess of American foreign policy in the Middle East. Finally, there's a possible murder of a spider in Australia. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom is joining us this afternoon from London, England, where he resides. And as always, to remind you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule, which I'm sure he's in great need of in light of the late hour last night of the president's address. As a matter of fact, I'm looking forward to hearing his observation both about the address, but also the issues associated with that. But before we even get started on that, first thing first, Tom, good evening to you, and how's the weather in London?
The weather's all right here. It's not too cold, not too hot. In the rest of Europe, they're having a terrible cold snap, lots and lots of snow. They've had avalanches in Austria where people have died.
Right.
But we've had no snow whatsoever in the UK.
Is this by the way, do you get much snow in the UK?
Not in the south. Okay. Very rare. They do have ski slopes up in Scotland, but they're not very popular. UK is really not noted for snowfall.
Yeah, Scotland's
That nice little stream of water that comes up past North Carolina from the Gulf of Mexico keeps the snow away.
Mm-hmm. The Gulf Stream. And, of course, Scotland's better known for its golfing. Anyhow, all right, let's talk about the events of last evening, early this morning for you. And, of course, that's the presidential speech. And we'll get into the issue of the government shutdown. First question, were folks in the European community, and I'm going to include the UK on that, glued to their televisions or their radio stations to hear the president's speech? Was it something of international interest?
Yes, it was, but they weren't actually glued to their radio stations or television. It was 2 a.m. here in London when he spoke. They waited until the morning. They weren't that interested.
I'm disappointed.
And so we all waited 2 a.m. And we read or watched it on YouTube or something like that.
Now, it's really still fresh in the minds of the media and of course, the public at large. But I'm curious, has there been much in the way of analysis in the past?
There's been a lot of fact-checking by a lot of people, and Trump has not come out of it well at all. First of all, people have raised the issue of, is this a national emergency? Is it really a national emergency? If it's a national emergency, how can you say it's a national emergency when the number of people crossing the border illegally has dropped by 75% between 2000 and 2017?
Those are the numbers that have been caught. We don't know how many have actually crossed the border.
Yeah, I know, but still. I know. So are you saying that they weren't catching them back in 2000?
Oh.
I think that would be incorrect. But also the number of drugs, that are being smuggled across the border. Yes, most of the drugs come over the southern border, according to all the statistics I've read. But they come over through legal points of entry, 90% of them.
Well,
they don't come over places where they're, it's just a river or whatever, or a sand dune. The last one is whether or not the immigrants are dangerous people, whether they are the criminals that Trump says they are. And according to the Texas police, 40% the illegal and legal immigrants commit 40% less crime in Texas as a proportion of the population than native-born Americans.
But it doesn't matter. One crime is one crime.
It
does not matter. You're getting into statistical analysis, and I think it's wonderful. But the issue is
these statistics that are being used by Trump.
Wait.
If he's going to use statistics, then he has to expect them to be challenged.
Okay, that's fine. But the real issue is a crime is a crime is a crime. But here's a question for you, Tom. In relationship to the recent influx, of which there was a lot of publicity, about a couple of hundred, maybe 1,000 boat people crossing the English Channel into the UK.
250.
250. Okay, just 250. And yet there was a significant cry there within the United Kingdom in Parliament that they need to do something.
Oh, I will now accuse you of what I call whataboutery.
What about what?
Whataboutery, trying to deflect the argument by pointing towards another issue.
I'm just using
it. This is a classic case. No. And I'm not saying that the British were right, because I said last week, if you will recall, that in fact they were trying to inflate a problem for political reasons. And I think Trump is trying to do the same thing. And that's what they're saying here in the columnists.
Okay, all right.
And on television and everything else, the commentators are saying that Trump is inflating the problem for political purposes.
Okay.
He made a pledge, was not based on actual real statistics. He created a fear.
It's interesting. It's a fear for the general populace, if you will. But for the folks that actually experience, and I know folks who have experienced the results of illegals crashing into their home and literally tying them up. I know specific case, personal experience of friends of mine. Interestingly enough, some 40 years ago, which has been a long time since this, we've seen other instances.
But one illegal does it. Does that mean all illegals are guilty?
No, but you've got to stop.
That's the fear you've got to be careful of not propagating.
Tom, if you're propagating a fear, then people should not lock their doors when they leave their homes. I mean, if you want to talk about propagating a fear, how many homes are broken into? You can use those statistical analysis as well. I think we're getting far afield, but I find your interesting observations. But more importantly, this is what is being stated here in the European press. So they're paying close attention to this issue. Quick question. Does the community there in the United Kingdom, and of course you said whataboutery, pointing a finger at me. My question for you, Tom, is does the European community see this issue in any similarity to the experiences there with the immigrants?
No, they're hypocrites.
Hypocrites. Who are hypocrites?
I must confess, there's a lot of hypocrisy, and you're right to point it out. There's a lot of hypocrisy. They treat them as two different issues.
Okay, how the European community does with this issue of asylum seekers and immigrants versus how it sees the U.S. Very interesting, and thank you very much for that candid remark on your part, Tom. Tom Arms, of course, of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, we're going to move to a break here in a few moments, but I want to chat one other item. That, of course, is the topic of the shutdown. Is that a topic of interest again? And, of course, it's related to the issue of the immigration and the border wall, et cetera. But I'm wondering the topic of the shutdown. Does Europe care? Is there any impact at this point?
Well, it's certainly being covered. There's not been a lot of comment I've seen. It's been covered fairly straight. It's seen more or less basically as a partisan issue, totally partisan issue. A row between the Republican president and the Democrats in the House of Representatives. It's certainly being covered in great detail, and they basically keep saying over and over again, Trump has said he will take the blame for it. I think that's a phrase that's going to come back to haunt him.
It's something that is in reality a result of a dispute between the Democrats and the Republicans. And you're right, it's a partisan issue. It is interesting, last night's report, of course, was a report to the public. What was your opinion of the rebuttal from the Democrats?
I thought it was interesting. I am a bit of a student of the Constitution, and the Constitution does not recognize political parties. It does, however, recognize that the Senate and the House of Representatives together have co-equal status with the executive and the judiciary. So I was a bit surprised that the way they rebutted it or allowed the rebuttal to take place was partisan rather than Congress versus the president, which is what the Constitution says. And so I think there was every reason for Nancy Pelosi to speak And I think maybe because she's third in line to the presidency, should anything happen to Mike Pence and the president,
that's frightening.
She had maybe a case to speak on her own. And also because the House of Representatives is primarily responsible for financial matters. But I don't think there was a place there for Chuck Schumer. And I'm looking at it from a constitutional and legal point of view. Mm-hmm. I think the network should have done the same.
Very interesting. A quick question for you and a comparative analysis here with particularly let's use the United Kingdom, because we're going to talk about the issue of Brexit. When the prime minister speaks to the media, does the media reach out to the opponents, the opposing parties, to seek their observations? Do they, quote, give equal time to the other side of the argument?
Yes, they do. They absolutely do. They're very careful to do that. In fact, they have a formula for doing it because you have more than one political party. And it's a bit annoying for the smaller parties who don't get equal time because it's based on how many seats you have in Parliament as to how much time you're allowed on television.
We're going to take a quick break on that. Our guest this afternoon, of course, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us this evening, actually in advance of the show, because it is nearly 5 hours advanced for him. As we prepare the program, it's going on towards 11:30. PM, so I'm sure he's resting peacefully in bed. Tom, thank you for, as always, being part of the program. I want to talk about two other items here in the States, and then I want to move to the issues there in the United Kingdom and the European community and around the world. Let's talk about the situation in the Middle East and the recent announcement by the president of removing troops from Syria and now backtracking and, for all intents and purposes, saying, well, it won't be that quick. You make note of this under the title Chaos of U.S. Middle East policy. So what is the observations there in the United Kingdom and the European community and the whole situation there in the Middle East?
Oh, they're really worried about it. I mean, Trump says they're going to be withdrawn immediately. Then he changes it to 30 days. And then he sends off Pompeo and Bolton to tour the Middle East. And he sort of backtracks on the 30 days. And then he says 120 days. Well, you know, 30 days is virtually immediately. So is 120 days. And then he says, well, we're going to do it because, you know, the Turkish president said he wouldn't do anything about the Kurds. And the Turkish president goes on television and says, you've got to be nuts. I'm going to crush the buggers. You know, given half the chance, you pull your U.S. troops in out and I will do what I want to do against the Kurds. And I don't want them there. And then you have Bolton and Pompeo saying, well, we're going to stay there and as long as the Kurds need us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's complete chaos. On top of that, you've got the Kurds, the Kurdish leaders are seriously worried now,
mm-hmm.
and they're spending a lot of time in both Damascus and Moscow trying to get reassurances from them because they think that's where their bread is buttered now.
Damascus?
Finally.
Damascus?
Finally,
wait, pardon
both
me.
The Chinese and Russians are trying to tie up construction contracts for the rebuilding of Syria.
Well, no, you know, first off, Damascus. The Kurds are looking to Damascus.
Yes, they've been shuttling between Damascus. Their leadership has been shuttling between Damascus and Moscow to try and get reassurances.
And related to the
because they can't get them, they can't trust the United States.
And back to the issue of the investment in Syria, much of what's going on in the Middle East has never been something of conformity and continuity. It's a very fluid environment. I'm talking over the past 100 years. Is there any real trust?
Well, I can go back further than that.
Actually, yes, you can. Is there any real trust in that community? I mean, so maybe the Russians and the Chinese make investments. How do they know that they'll maintain the relationships?
Okay, well, your argument I think you're leading the argument to why should we be involved? It's just too fluid.
Right.
And I don't think that's a valid argument. I think you've got to stay in there. You've got to have a presence simply because of the geostrategic importance of the Middle East. Not only oil, but linking Asia and Europe, sitting on the Mediterranean, everything else. You cannot ignore those facts of life.
All right. And then one quick question here, and I think this is an important one. President Erdogan, of course, and we've talked about this 2 years ago, was very interested in becoming a member of the European Union. And I'm wondering, what does Europe see happening in Turkey? And I'm not asking for detailed information, but just a sense of temperature, if you will.
Yeah, very briefly, you know, a year ago they were saying that Turkish membership has been moved to the back burner. I think it's been moved out of the kitchen.
Wow. All right. So, and of course, that doesn't do much for the way of creating diplomatic relations for Turkey. Turkey, of course, would like to be the caliphate. Am I correct on that? Is that the impression you get?
I think there are some people who think that Erdogan wants that. He wants to reassert. I mean, it was the caliphate up until World War One.
Right, the
end
Ottoman.
Of World War One. And I think that there are some people who think that Erdogan wants to reestablish Turkey as the caliphate for Islam.
One last item here about what's taking place, and this kind of related to the U.S. Well, not kind of, it very much related to the U.S. There's been recent stories here about Justice Ginsburg and her health. And, of course, the Supreme Court is a big issue here in the United States. I'm curious, much coverage and interest there in Europe?
There was coverage when Justice Ginsburg came out of hospital just before Christmas. And the operation was announced a success. They have not really covered the fact that she missed the first day of oral arguments. There's been a few newspapers have made note of it, but within the context of what do you expect? She's 85 years old.
Uh-huh. That is one of those issues. Let's talk about this in relationship to the European court and courts in general. Do those courts have positions for life?
I will have to find out. I don't know.
It's one of those oddities. And of course, the Supreme Court is such a unique entity here in the States because it is literally a position for life. And this is one of those topics where folks are aging out. And do they retire gracefully or do they literally exit in place? And that's one of the great interests we have here in the States.
Let me make a note of that. And I'll come back to you next week on that one. I should know that.
Well,
I apologize for not. Think the answer is going to be it's going to vary from country to country, but right. I don't know what it is for the European Court of Justice.
I know it's just one of those oddities, and of course now, interestingly enough, Tom, is what has been historically seen as sort of a passive unit of government, being the courts, one only drawn in when there was a dispute. It has become a big issue here in the States because of the term an activist court. I'm just curious if we're leading the world in sort of the association now with the judiciary being a key player in the political environment.
I think the reason for that, if you look over the court's history, is that the justices, the reason for their appointment for life was so that they could rise above the political fray.
Exactly.
And the feeling is that in the past, they have been, but as the country has become politically more partisan, the court has reflected that in its judgments. And that is why I think more interest is being paid to it.
Oh, no question about it. And of course, how the courts are now being used, if you will, as a pry bar or maybe a club to challenge the opposition. That it's just a quick question and a thought. All right, we'll take a quick break on that one. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here with us, Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. Donald Trump takes a reverse scientific approach to issues. He searches for the voters' greatest fears, enunciates them in the most dramatic and divisive language possible, and then twists and invents facts and reinvents history to support his claim. Some might say, so what? Isn't that what every politician does? Yes. But the President of the United States has taken the practice to an entirely new level, and in doing so he has undermined a political class which was already standing on crumbling foundations. The Washington Post, which keeps a tally of presidential lies, reported in his first 601 days of his presidency, Donald Trump lied or made misleading statements 5,000 times. You would have thought that the Donald could have temporarily broken himself of this nasty habit when addressing the nation from behind the resolute desk in the Oval Office. Wrong. Instead, his televised speech justifying the government shutdown and a demand for a southern border wall was possibly the best example yet of Donald Trump's inability to speak the truth. First off, there was no justification to use the tool of a televised address to the nation. There is no crisis. America is not being invaded. Terrorists are not flooding across the U.S.-Mexican border. These fears were manufactured by Donald Trump to ensure his election to the White House, and they are now being exaggerated to keep him there. Trump is using the oldest political trick in the book. When in trouble, create a crisis, create an enemy, offer a solution. The more expensive and grander, the better. Trump's crisis is the invasion from the South. The enemies are the Democrats, Hispanics, and anyone who has a wish to live and work in the United States. The solution is a visible wall, which Trump can point to and say, "See, look, there it is, the wall. I did something that no other president would." Presidents Clinton and George W. Bush may have been justified declaring a national emergency back in 2000 when they exchanged tenancies on the White House. In that year, 1.6 million people were arrested trying to cross into the United States from Mexico. Trump said that his predecessors did in fact tell him that they wished they'd built the wall he proposes. They deny this. A lie. The number crossing the border in 2016, 303,916, was nowhere near the level 18 years ago. And building a wall will not resolve the illegal alien problem because the largest category of illegal aliens is those who've overstayed their visas, 629,000 of them in 2015, according to the latest figures from the Department of Homeland Security. Trump claims the wall would also be a barrier against drugs. It is true that most of the heroin, cocaine, and marijuana that enters the United States comes through Mexico. It is another lie that the wall would stop it. Again, according to U.S. government statistics, 90% of the drugs are smuggled through legal points of entry. What about the rapists, murderers, and terrorists flooding northwards? A large proportion of Hispanics settle in Texas, whose state police department report that the arrest rate of illegal immigrants is 40% below that of native-born Americans. Immigrants, especially illegal immigrants, know that if they break the law, they will be deported and their American dream ends. As for terrorists, the Cato Institute reported that from 1975 through 2017, 7 people who entered the U.S. illegally from special interest countries were convicted of planning attacks on U.S. soil. None of them crossed from Mexico. For the supporters of Donald Trump, belief in the president is more of a religious experience than a political one. They accept the word of Trump as literal truth because it reflects their fear. But perhaps, just perhaps, if the fact-checkers keep chipping away at the wall of lies, support for Trump will totter and eventually crumble.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And just to remind you, as always, that this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate Tom's sleeping schedule. It's nearly 11:30 p.m. his time there in London as this program airs live here on the talk station. Tom, let's move from events in the United States or associated with the United States to the topic of Brexit. It's something that we've been talking about now for 3 years going on. It seems not to be changing much. I did note, though, apparently yesterday, the Prime Minister was handed somewhat of a defeat by Parliament over what she can accomplish in a no-deal Brexit. So bring us up to date on this, because when we chatted several weeks back, we were 100 days
from the initiation of the exit from the EU by Great Britain. And my, there's a lot to talk about. So what's the status?
The status is that we haven't moved any further along. And that's what's so worrying about it. There is no majority in Parliament for any of the proposals that are on the table. No majority for anything. And so the risk is that because there is no majority and there is a deadline for the 29th of March, that you will end up with a no deal by default because they can't agree on anything else.
Now, what happens in a no deal Brexit?
Well, we don't know for certain. I mean, there's lots of scare stories, and we don't know whether they're scare stories or not. But, you know, every aspect of life, it's a bit like the federal government just ceasing to exist. So every aspect of life will be affected. So, for instance, it would affect the flow of medicines from Europe, and right. something like 85% of all the pharmaceuticals come from Europe. And so they would be held up the border for up to 2 months because all the documents have to be checked. It would close the border between Ireland and Northern Ireland, which would be a major problem because it could lead to a renewal of the troubles in Northern Ireland very easily. Because there are various restrictions involving air traffic between European countries, those would no longer apply to planes leaving the United Kingdom. And so what would have to happen initially until it could be sorted out was that no planes leaving the United Kingdom could land in EU airports. Yeah, and the list just goes on. At the moment, because there's free trade, any truck carrying goods or railway carriage that's carried through the Channel Tunnel doesn't have to be checked. The manifestos don't have to be checked by customs officials. They just, you know, are waved through. Well, of course, you know, if you put up tariff barriers, all those will have to be checked.
Right.
And so they're talking about 20, 25-mile backup at the ports as they try and deal with this.
Question for you.
I'm sorry. I could go on all day.
Okay. No,
long list.
Yeah, no, and I think you're articulating it well, because something we don't quite get our minds around here. Let's talk about this in relationship, though, Tom, of a failure to have a conclusion by the 29th of March. Is there a possibility that it could be extended, or for that matter, the UK could simply say, okay, we're going to rebound back to the initial concept of being part of the European Union?
Yeah, well, certainly the first is being discussed, and that is to extend the deadline for Article 50, as it's called.
It seems to me, Tom, that it would be beneficial to the European community to delay this because while, yes, it might cause a major pinch for the United Kingdom, particularly Great Britain, it will mean also a delay in payments and business and activity for the European community.
They don't want problems on their border either. I mean, Britain would be badly hit. They don't want Britain to have civil disturbances and things like that, which might arise. As a result, no, of course, it's not in Europe's interest either. But at the same time, they have to think of the wider legal issues and other countries that might want to take the same route as Britain. Yes, I think the European Union would look kindly upon an extension of Article 50 if they think it would lead to something.
Well,
at the moment, there's no suggestion that it would lead to anything.
Well,
the British have to come up with a suggestion as to what would be the result of extending it.
I would think other members of the European Union, upon looking at the experience there with the United Kingdom, are second-guessing any decisions on their part of breaking up the European Union. So in some regards, there may be a positive out of this. Latest survey says half of Britain's financial services will move to the EU if there is no deal Brexit. That move would have to happen pretty quickly after the March 29th deadline, would it not?
Well, and they've all got plans in place. A lot of these things, they work in a virtual office. So it's really a case of picking up your laptop and
going to
Paris.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to an item here. Belgium.
But let me just add that the financial services are something like 10% of the British GDP.
Right. Lloyd's of London is a good example, major insurance industry there as well. Let's move to items there in the European community. Belgium Jews and Muslims unite on a new law against kosher and halal meals.
Yeah. Well, it's very interesting to see the Muslims and Jews, you know, singing from the same hymn sheet. Or Quranic sheet, or whatever you want to call it, Torah sheet. The Belgians are introducing humane slaughter laws. And so you cannot produce in Belgium anymore, as of the 1st of January, kosher or halal meat because of the way that it's prepared. I don't know if you want me to go into how it's prepared.
It's not imperative, but I think it is interesting, and I find it fascinating that the more sensitive nature of the populace is playing a role and conflicting with the religious interest. What's the future of this particular case? Is there much of a chance that it will influence the Belgium's new laws?
I have no idea.
That's interesting.
I think that they opposed the law when it first came up for the Belgian Parliament, and were unsuccessful. Excuse me. Were unsuccessful. I think they might just be able to import kosher and halal meat from France or the Netherlands or somewhere like that.
Or maybe the UK. Or maybe the UK.
Or maybe even the UK. Oh, no, they can't.
Let's talk, sticking with religion, Tom. The story behind the split in the Orthodox Church. This is an interesting story. And I'm thinking Ukraine and Russia.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's been covered much in the U.S. press.
Only briefly.
But the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, or the Ukrainian branch of the Russian Orthodox Church, has declared itself independent from the Russian Orthodox Church. Now, this is something, it's really interesting. These two churches have really been at loggerheads, not at loggerheads as such, but they have a long history. The Russian Orthodox Church was founded in Kiev. It was not founded in Russia. It was founded in the Ukraine.
Right.
And in fact, the first Tsar was based in Kiev, not in Russia. And so the Russians regard Kiev as a sort of cradle of their civilization, which is one of the reasons why they've got this tremendous problem with Ukraine now.
Right.
What happened in the 13th century, and it goes back a long way, what happened in the 13th century is that the Patriarch moved to Moscow, and so did the Tsar.
Okay. So, I just was curious. This has political as well as religious influence.
Absolutely.
Okay. I wanted to just mention that because we've got to move on to several other items before we go to the break. I think this is an interesting story that it's not getting a lot of discussion here in the States. The death of the Saudi Prince Talal bin Abdulaziz. Yes. Known as the Red Prince.
Known as the Red Prince.
Uh-huh.
And that's because he was sort of lone voice in the Saudi royal family in favor of reform. And in fact, in the early 60s, he was more or less exiled from the country and went off to live in Egypt.
Wow.
Which was very unusual for a member of the royal family. And he's long been a proponent of greater freedom for women. Now, I put this in partly because of the context this week. A great big new freedom for women.
Mm-hmm.
And that is they have to be told when they're divorced.
Right. Fascinating story associated with that.
And they can be told by text.
By text.
If they get a text saying, I'm divorcing you, they're divorced. But before, you could divorce your wife without even telling her.
It's fascinating what's happening in Saudi Arabia. Slowly but surely, and of course, women are being allowed to drive, if I'm not mistaken.
They're being allowed to drive, but they still, they still have to, each of them has to have a guardian, a male guardian, either a brother, a father, or a husband, who is appointed and is their legal representative. And he has to give them permission to drive. You know, if they want a driving license, he has to sign the document saying they have permission. If they want to marry, he has to sign the document saying they can marry. If they want to go to university, or if they want to leave the country, they have to have the permission of their male guardian.
Quick question for you is, before we go to the break, Tom, is there an indication that Saudi Arabia is slowly but surely opening its doors, if you will, to modernity?
Slowly.
Very slowly. All right.
I don't know about the surely bit.
Okay. You're listening to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're coming to that final moment of the program each week when we get a little bit of a twist in the storylines. But before we do, I've got a real quick question for you on this one, Tom. You've got a note here, U.S. beefs up African military presence in the wake of Congolese elections. We've talked about Africa from time to time and the role that, quite frankly, China particularly is playing in the development of that region of the world, and particularly the issue of Congolese elections. Why is the U.S. so involved, just out of curiosity?
Because it looks as if the Congolese elections are going to be fixed, and that could lead to more fighting in Congo. And it's likely to spill over into the neighboring countries. And the United States has big investments in that region. That is a very mineral-rich area. There's manganese, there's gold, there's diamonds, all these things. And a lot of big American companies are involved there. There are something like 2,000 American troops in Africa. And the word is that they're going to be moved, maybe, if not into Congo, they will be moved into the border areas in the countries with Congo to prevent or to help prevent the spread of any possible civil disobedience or fighting spreading over into those countries where America has investments, in particular Gabon.
Okay, and what about the rest of the European community? Is there interest and concern there as well?
The French are quite big. They have themselves about 1,500 troops in Africa.
Former colony. Congo was a former French colony.
No, it was Belgium.
Belgium. Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, it was basically a slave colony of the king. The British have about 500 troops, I suppose, in Africa as a whole. I don't know about their involvement in Congo. I think the French tend to focus more on North and West Africa, and the British the same.
All right. I was just curious about this. Is a topic, of course, we've talked about from time to time, and the role of the U.S. in Africa is something we don't get a lot of coverage about. Let's talk here and wrap it up with Australia, and they raced to solve a spider death.
Oh, yes. I love this story. This woman was out walking her dog in Perth, Australia. I think it was Perth. And she hears these screams, this man shouting, "Die, will you? Die! Why don't you just die?" And a woman screaming at the top of her voice and a toddler crying. So she whips out her mobile phone and calls the police, you know, 911.
Right.
And within 5 minutes, there's a dozen squad cars, there's people rushing or policemen rushing out with weapons and ready to bang down the door when the man comes to the door and says, "What are you doing here?" I said, "We heard there's a murder." "Well, my wife is frightened of spiders, and I was trying to kill it."
So, and he was telling the spider to die. Okay, Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us every Wednesday afternoon with a little bit of a twist and a smile on our face. Tom, thank you very much. And I've said it once before, but Happy New Year.
You too.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.